bad articles. In a series of tweets, Shell blasted the New York Times for their coverage of the funeral of NYPD officer Jonathan Diller and a Daily News article on the city's crime fighting in the subways. The mayor defended Shell and other cops on Tuesday, hinting he gave the okay for the tweets.
There are many articles that have been critical of them. You have to ask yourself, what happened this weekend? It was raw. 5 p.m. of the day they buried one of their own that they knew they were connected to. We saw something like that. I thought it was distasteful.
A few weeks ago, Shell tweeted the name of a state judge he accused of letting what he called a predator out of jail. Paul D'Arienzo, New York.
The previous program was in a personal update with Dr. Harriet Fraud. Her Tuesdays at 6:30 p.m. It's now 7 p.m. Stay tuned for Revolutions Per Minute, hosted and produced by the various members of the New York City chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America. That is coming up. It's 1 minute past 7 p.m. here on WBAI New York.
Revolutions Per Minute is a weekly radio show from the New York City chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America, recorded live at WBAI 99.5 FM in Brooklyn every Tuesday at 7 p.m. RPM is about doing the work to build a democratic socialist future. Each week, hear the latest news, analysis, and organizing experience from the minds and hearts of activists fighting every day in New York City. Join the movement at socialists.nyc.
Hey, New York City. You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute, live from the new WBAI studios, a socialist radio show and podcast from members of New York City Democratic Socialists of America. The Democratic Socialists of America is the largest socialist organization in the United States, with 95,000 members nationwide, and New York City DSA is its biggest chapter. We are run by our 9,000-plus members and organizers who are working together to build democratic socialism in all five boroughs. I'm Lisa Shi. I use she, her pronouns. I'm an eco-socialist organizer joining you from Tucson, Arizona tonight, which is occupied Thana Otham and Yaqui land. Tonight, we continue our series of interviews with New York City DSA's 2024 slate of endorsed candidates, and we'll be talking with Ian Terrell Huntley, a retail worker, father, and tenant running for Assembly District 56 in Bed-Stuy and Crown Heights. We'll talk to Ian about the beauty of Bed-Stuy, fighting for affordable rent, standing in solidarity with Palestine despite facing AIPAC money, and so much more. And we'll have a few minutes left at the end of the show, not a whole lot of time, but about 5 minutes if you want to call in. If you want to jot down that number to call in later, it's 212-209-2877. But first, the headlines with Alex Randazzo.
Hello, listeners. This is Alex with your headlines for today, Tuesday, April 2nd. In local news, the New York State budget will once again be late. One reason for the delay, according to State Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins, Yonkers, is that lawmakers are waiting for labor unions and the Real Estate Board of New York to agree to a deal on housing. In a Daily News op-ed, Representative Nydia Velasquez, Williamsburg, called on the state legislature to pass good cause eviction. State Senator Julia Salazar, Bushwick, talked to city and state about the state of negotiations on the bill. Additionally, the Rent Guidelines Board's annual negotiations over proposed rent increases revealed huge profit increases for Manhattan landlords. State Assembly Speaker Carl Heastie's girlfriend can continue working as a lobbyist in Albany. Moreover, Mayor Adams' administration overrode Comptroller Brad Lander's rejection of a Rikers Island commissary contract and issued the $33 million no-bid multi-year contract to the Keefe Group, a Miami-based private equity firm. The Comptroller's office cited a 2023 investigation into the Keefe Group by the city, which found they had overcharged detainees and their families for food. Finally, the New York State Department of Corrections and Community Supervision is planning a system-wide lockdown during the upcoming solar eclipse. In election news, AIPAC donors have formed Solidarity PAC, a New York state-level version of the national organization to attack critics of Israel's brutal war on Gaza. Jacobin interviewed DSA-endorsed Ian Huntley about his insurgent campaign for Assembly District 56, Bedford-Stuyvesant. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, Bed-Stuy, endorsed Representative Jamal Bowman, Westchester. The late endorsement comes with Bowman facing an AIPAC-funded primary challenger. Finally, the New York presidential primary is tomorrow, and the Working Families Party is urging voters to protest Joe Biden by casting blank ballots. For Revolutions Per Minute, this is Alex Randazzo. Now, back to the studio for today's show.
Thanks, Alex. And of course, the primary vote was actually today, but thanks so much for those headlines. They are brought to you by The Thorn, an incredible weekly newsletter by New York City DSA, Electoral Working Group, covering local politics and radical activism. Subscribe at thethornnyc.substack.com. You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. I'm Lisa Shee, and tonight we're talking to Ian Terrell Huntley, DSA's endorsed candidate for Assembly District 56 in Bed-Stuy and Crown Heights. And Ian and I started off our conversation with me learning to actually correctly pronounce his name. For our listeners, it's spelled out E-O-N, so very easy to mispronounce, but Ian was very gracious about me getting it wrong. Let's go to our conversation with Ian.
Yeah, so, you know, I don't ever expect anyone to get my name based on the spelling, because it is spelled Eon. And I've never met anyone with the name Ian that spells their name the same way besides my father. And it just happens as a funny story, because my dad is originally from Guyana, and he grew up on a farm in a more rural area. And he didn't get his birth certificate at birth. And then so my grandmother actually took him to get his birth certificate in the city in Georgetown. And I guess the person who was transcribing his name did it in a creative West Indian spelling, like Amon, Eon. All right, I got it, you know, and put down, I guess, how they thought Ian was spelled based on their phonetic pronunciation. And henceforth, my dad was E-O-N, Ian. And then my grandma was like, we're not going back. So that's it. There we are. And I'm named after him. So,
well, yeah. I apologize for being a bad journalist and not doing my research and stuff ahead of time, but I'm very glad to have heard that story. And yeah, we're really excited to have you on RPM today. And yeah, we'd actually like to learn a little bit more about you. We really like to have our listeners get to know our guests. And in part of that, you know, your socialist origin story, you know, what about you and who you are kind of made you say, hey, I'm a socialist and want to join DSA.
I love this story, because I feel like it's a story that that many people can really relate to. Well, first of all, I'm a millennial. I'll be 40 this year. And I would say, just in our lifetime, and anyone who's, you know, obviously younger than that age has experienced this as well, but just growing up with 9/11, Iraq War, the Wall Street collapse, and every other single, you know, once in a lifetime event that has occurred just in a span of, like, you know, 10 years time almost. And then also, like, coupled with that, like, with failures of, like I said, with Wall Street, this failures of capitalism that just really weighed on things. And this is kind of like, you know, I was already radicalized then and primed for something. And just looking for like meaning and trying to understand what the hell or what the heck was going on. And so with Bernie Sanders' run in 2016, this was an illuminating moment because it really brought to the forefront all these things, like I said, that had been weighing me down, and these things that where I had been internalizing failures of capitalism as things that were my own shortcomings. And I'd done a lot of things that I think people say that you should do in order to succeed, like go to college and go to a good college. And I came from, modest working class background where, my mom did get her degree later on, but like amongst the younger generation, like it was my cousin and myself who were the first to get these degrees. I did all these things that you should like think would be what would lead you to success. But, there was a lot of turmoil and this run that Bernie did in terms, and then also putting for socialist policies and really like, I think putting in the forefront really was illuminating for me and really was like, okay, I realized like democratic socialism and socialism in itself was like definitely a solution. And then also like understanding like what was going on, like Marx's perspective on the world really also like put that in perspective. And I was like, okay. And then so I that kind of brought me to DSA, but I didn't become a dues-paying member. But it was actually AOC that was the one that really was like, that was the thing that brought me to DSA. Sure, her run was something that really inspired me. I mean, I actually like sat across from the table from her at an early, an earlier campaign meeting. Like she was already endorsed by DSA, but it was just like a meeting for people to join up in the campaign and actually got like a Slack invite, but I couldn't really be involved because I was negotiating a contract as a union member at the time. These are all very inspiring things. First Bernie and then AOC.
And now you're going to be running for office. What made you decide to do that?
I would say this is again part of this continuous story. AOC started running on socialist policies that I think speak to the working class. And we don't have a labor party in this country, but the Democratic Party is the closest thing we've had. And so there is a rich history of that, I think calling back to FDR. And I think that AOC and then eventually the other socialists that have been elected in New York City have also really inspired me. New York is a place that's not necessarily known for having I would say that the powers that be in the establishment have a real lock and hold on how things go in this state. And they have for a long time, but DSA has really broken through that. And they've elevated people of color like myself and the other socialists who've also been elected in office as people who've been a part of movement, but also as leaders to run and deliver as politicians for this movement. And so I myself, as I mentioned, have been a union member and been a part of bargaining committee and fighting for the best and last contract. I didn't know it was going to be the last contract when we were fighting for this, but it was the last contract, sadly, when I worked at Barney's New York. I sat across from the bosses with the rest of the members, and we fought against predatory payment system and also just things like healthcare, which was something really serious. And then just in continuing with my story in terms of like how I arrived here, I was also PTA president of my kid's school. And I took that role on when the previous PTA, it was a time of turmoil because COVID had just hit. I think the school had just lost its original principal. He had left actually right before the COVID situation happened. So it wasn't even related. He had a personal situation he had to resolve. And then so principal leaves, PTA leaves, and And then the global pandemic happens. And so I thought this was a time that I always had been a supportive parent, but I need to like step up for my school and my community by being PTA president and by some way being active and trying to deliver for people in a time that I know that they need help. And then from there, this was kind of like this. So this me running for office is like the next step in this, and just knowing that my community really needs help and needs support. And if people are asking for this help and support and trying to fight for this ongoing and daily in Albany, and people silently suffering because they feel like their politicians aren't listening. And it's time that someone move forward and act on this. And there's a policy that is really central to this that we can talk about, which is good cause, because housing is very important to this race and to my future constituents.
Yeah, we can definitely dig into good cause a little bit. And I definitely want to hear a little bit more about how being a father, you know, I think will impact you if you do go to Albany. And it was also really interesting hearing you talking about being at the bargaining table, because that's something that Claire Valdez, who we had on last month, you know, talked about. And just this idea of like, oh, wow, bringing this union organizer mentality to Albany is an exciting thing that we could have. Two more people in the room with that experience.
Oh, absolutely. So yeah, being a parent, it's definitely informs me in a lot of different ways. I think it really does put into perspective this drive to do more, because, you know, like I have this thing weighing on me. It's not just about myself, but it's also about my children. And I think about, in turn, all the other children, all the other families. And it also really informs my policy. I mean, everything about what I stand for and what I'm running on is informed by my identity. But being a parent, a working class parent, who I still have my day job, as I run this campaign, I'm still working full time. And so these are things that weigh on me, like the things about childcare. It's not just an abstract. I've been in a situation where we had health care. My wife was a teacher for for 18 years in the New York City public school system. So we had amazing benefits, her being a city worker. But there was a time when both our kids were in daycare, and she was essentially working just for us to have this insurance, because one of our salaries were just going to pay for daycare. So I know what that struggle is. It's a reality that I've experienced, and I know what people are going through. So it gives me this drive to deliver, not like, you know, obviously I really believe in policies, but I have lived these things. And then on the flip other side of that, thinking about CUNY and SUNY, everything I think really can be tied to like, the realities of being a parent and what it means to try to raise a family in New York, and how I know that people are struggling. And yes, so I'm grateful that the being a parent, it just really, it gives me a passion and perspective that I think I'm very excited to bring to Albany as well, because my kids are, 9, almost, or 10 and 7. So, this is something that, is very much a reality of what I'm experiencing.
What are their names?
Josephine and Colette, but we call them Joe and Coco.
Well, shout out to Joe and Coco. We're fighting for your future. You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming on your favorite podcast app. I'm Lee Zishi, and tonight we're talking to Ian Terrell Huntley as part of our series of interviews with New York City DSA 2024 slate of endorsed candidates. We had Claire Valdez on the show last month, and we'll be talking to Jonathan Soto before the primary in June. And this series of interviews with DSA endorsed candidates is something that we have done every single year here on Revolutions Per Minute. And we are only able to do these kind of interviews with listener support, you know, from listeners like you. So if you so far enjoying this interview with Ian, if you've enjoyed our past coverage of DSA endorsed candidates, bringing a different perspective to elections, please, please, please consider donating to WBAI. You can do that by calling 212-209-2950. Again, that number is 212-209-2950, or you can go to WBAI.org, become a buddy, donate every month in the name of Revolutions Per Minute. You know, I say it every time I host, but we are literally only able to be on air because of listeners like you. You know, when I was speaking with Ian and listening back to that interview, you know, him talking about this feeling that you're doing everything right, but under capitalism, it's kind of never good enough. And for me, such an important moment in my life was realizing that, you know, so many of the things that I felt were like wrong about me were just because somebody was trying to sell me something. And, you know, that helped, you know, being free from capitalism in that way is such a liberating feeling. And so know that, you know, on WBAI and here on Revolutions Per Minute, you know, we don't take any ad money. You know, we're never trying to sell you something. The only thing that, you know, we're trying to sell you is to, you know, join a movement where we can all work together to fight for a better future. And, you know, I'm sure as you watch primary coverage tonight and the rest of the year, you might be left with a very awful taste in your mouth. But hopefully here on Revolutions Per Minute, we can show you a different side of politics, a side of politics that's fighting for the people. But we're only able to do that if you help us out and help keep us on the air. So if you can, even if it's only a little bit of money, please donate what you can. Again, you can do that by calling 212-209-2950, or you can go to WBAI.org. We are so appreciative of everything you're able to do and keeping us on the air. So since we are on the air, let's go back to my conversation with Ian Terrell Huntley, New York City DSA endorsed candidate for Assembly District 56 in Bed-Stuy and Crown Heights. And yeah, so you mentioned, you know, one of the reasons you're running is, you know, for your community. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, the district that you're running in and what are some of the issues you think right now that are facing people the most in that assembly district?
This district is a beautiful, it encompasses Bed-Stuy and Crown Heights, which Bed-Stuy, I think, is, you know, in many people's mind, a very much like a rich and cultural neighborhood that when you think about and you can close your eyes, if you know anything about Brooklyn and you hear the words Bed-Stuy, then you have a vision of this and you can see the brownstones and the beautiful picturesque blocks and the mixed community of people who not only live in these brownstones as people who own, but many people who rent, because this district actually is also 77% renters. So it's a district that is a working class, a working class community. It's something that I've a place I've lived since 2009. It is something that, like as I mentioned before, that is 77% renters. So we know that New York and like much of the country is facing a housing crisis. And it's not just a crisis of people like of availability of housing, but it's also the affordability of housing and also a rise in evictions. And so this neighborhood is no different, and it has a higher amount of tenants than other districts, as well as having, it's also 76% of these renters are also Black. So this is a neighborhood that, you know, when you think about how people are affected by this housing crisis and then what's going on with rents and the affordability of good home and housing in general. It's really impacting communities of color. And this is a community that is known for its rich Black history. So these are people that are being pushed out. And this is something, as a native, it's just really, really devastating to me. I originally grew up in East New York, but I've had some relation to this neighborhood, just having friends and family that I've known who've lived here over the years. And so coming here has been something that I've always thought about. Wow, this is a great and amazing place, especially relative to the look of Bed-Stuy, relative to East New York, which is very industrial, kind of almost like Red Hook in some ways. And I just always admired that. And now to be in this place and trying and knowing that people who are part of that rich history are being pushed out, people like me who dreamed of raising a family and are maybe raising a family now and now have to make a choice about if they can stay here or not. These are the people that I think about. And this is, like I said, the message that I hear when we talk to people and the concerns that they have. And even amongst people who own homes, they care because they see what's going on. They care about the fact that their neighbors, maybe, and their friends and maybe family members are being pushed and priced out as well. And they may not even have the opportunity to possibly be as aspire to that dream of being possibly a homeowner in this neighborhood with how pricing of homes have gotten, or just the fact that simply people can't even stay here.
Yeah, well, you just made me very miss Bed-Stuy very, very much. I'm in Tucson now, but I lived on Quincy Street between Bedford and Nostrand for 8 or 9 years. And then also was fighting a pipeline on the other side of Bed-Stuy, near Saratoga Park. So would walk kind of all across Bed-Stuy, down those streets with all those brownstones. And yeah, I just have some very beautiful memories of walking down those streets. And also, saw so many of those, homes and, single family homes where you could see sometimes multiple generations living in that home sell out, in those 8 or 9 years, and just gigantic condo buildings with luxury apartments that are so ugly getting mm-hmm. built, mm-hmm. Saw that change happening.
And those luxury apartments and buildings are not, as you say, luxury. So they're not priced for the most working class individuals. So it's not where it's being replaced by something that is really serving the community that may be there already. It's terrible. But I do think, yes, that I think about those beautiful things. Just walking through this neighborhood is like it being in a movie. Just...
Yeah, it's really, really lovely. So you mentioned, good cause. Do you want to talk a little bit more about what that is and how that would benefit people living in Bed-Stuy and why it's something that you're running on?
Good cause. This is a bill that I'm really proud to be running on and supporting. It's something that Senator Salazar put up, and it's something that would go a long way towards fighting and protecting tenants and empowering tenants. It protects against unreasonable rent hikes. As we know, landlords, or I should say slumlords, because that's most of what people the people who are fighting against this and who they are, because, this is protects against tenants from retaliatory, discriminatory evictions. And so, any person who obviously is a good landlord doesn't have to be concerned about this. But as we know, this is not the case in New York. But good cause also would help move us towards a more universal rent control in this city, which is something that, as we see, pretty much people are subject to outrageous rent hikes that can be on a whim and sometimes are done obviously with the idea in mind of pushing people out in order to bring, as the landlord sees, more profit into the building or into their pockets as opposed to the families that are being displaced. So this bill really does push back and fight against that. And it's like one part of a policy solution that that I think is essential for us to have the kind of housing that we need in New York. But we also need the green new social housing bill that Emily Gallagher has proposed. That's another part of this this solution that we need to be putting forward in Albany for our state and also as a model for the country.
Yeah. So now you've mentioned a couple different DSA electeds. So for you, you know, someone who's running with DSA's endorsement, you know, what does it mean? Like, what is the DSA difference? And why do you think, you know, that having a DSA elected, you know, might be a better fit for Bed-Stuy, you know, rather than the current assembly member?
Sure. Now we're going to attack this to, you know, good cause, because there's a lot of things I think that this is central to. But for one, the DSA electeds are part of a movement. They're not part of some sort of establishment, you know, group that has to answer to donors who definitely have a different agenda than the people who are the constituents. And so our DSA candidates, like myself, we only take money from small donors. We don't take any money from any sort of like special interest, super PAC, that like what we're all facing right now with a super PAC that's been put together that is explicitly targeting DSA candidates as well as WFP candidates. So pretty much anyone who stands on for the left and for reasonable working class politics and advancing those, they are coming for us. And so we've had in this moment that is a very serious and moment of consequence with what's going on in Palestine. DSA candidates have uniformly stood with Palestine and called for a ceasefire and also for advancing the rights of Palestinian people. And so that's also been something that has drawn this dark money attention. And again, this is the same dark money and the same special interests that also hold back legislation like Good Cause. Good Cause would require landlords to justify rent hikes of greater than 3%. And it would also, or 150% of the consumer price index. So like, this is something that reasonably someone like who, if you were a small landlord, it shouldn't matter. But we know that in New York, like the special interest that is controlling is the real estate lobby, RENBY. And so again, what a difference between myself and my opponent and other DSA candidates is that they accept this money and they gladly work and carry water for this lobby and push back against a thing that would have so much material effect for people in the state and in my situation for a overwhelming number of people in this district. So it's the money and who you answer to. I would say it's the clearest thing. And you can, from there, you can trace it to what you support and what you stand for, even in the face of movements like tenant groups and tenant rights, tenant unions and, activists and, left organizations who are on the ground, speaking and representing and made up of the people in the district and the communities that are asking for these politics and or policies. And you still have politicians that will hear them in their office and in their community even and dismiss them.
You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming on your favorite podcast app. You just heard from Ian Terrell Huntley, and we've got part three of our interview with him coming up very soon. But I did just want to remind you all that the last 5 minutes or so will be yours. They're yours to call in. So if you want to call in, that number is 212 212- 209-2877. We'll be opening up the phones around 7:50. So if you want to call in a little bit before that to get in the queue, we'll have about 5 minutes. And again, that number is 212-209-2877. And so today, DSA members and many, many more across New York left their primary ballots blank in protest of President Joe Biden's support of Israel's genocidal campaign in Gaza. I asked Ian if he had any comments about what is going on there and where he thinks the community he's running to represent stands on Palestinian solidarity. Here's what he had to say.
I mean, this is we're witnessing an atrocity before our eyes collectively as a global community. And it's devastating to think that this is something that's ongoing, continually, still ongoing and escalating. This is not something that seems to be moving towards, you know, like, oh, things are getting better now. I mean, you know, children, masses of family and people, men, women, children are on the verge of starving and dying. And as well as like living under the constant threat of just what may happen in terms of the siege that's also ongoing. And so I am very proud to say that, you know, that I, as a candidate and an individual, have come out and on the right side, I think, of where we, those who are, who haven't, don't have that clarity now, will come to see. And because of this, this stance in support of Palestine and in ending what's going on in Gaza, but also just, yeah, but being in support of Palestinian liberation, we're being targeted. We're being targeted. And this isn't in despite of the fact that, more than 70% of Democrats believe this. And overwhelmingly, it's actually what most people see as being the right thing. Yet we have an establishment that's disconnected and they're, ready to support and take, they're ready to support this stance that is also disconnected from what people say. Like when I talk to my friends, family, and neighbors and people I know in the community, they share the same sentiment as me. They see this as a social justice issue that's very much tied to, I think, how many people of color, frame and see things in terms of, a imperial kind of force that is exerting its will and in creating a two-tiered system. And in this case, it's escalated to a point of unspeakable horrors beyond just the daily struggles that people experience in the world that they're living in, two-tiered system. So, yes. With that said, standing for this and standing behind, and standing with, you know, for what the moral right message in this moment has drawn the attention of millionaires and billionaires who created a state level version of AIPAC that they have pledged, very clearly that they want to, I guess, punish us for this stance. And they frame it in such twisted way as a solidarity pact is what they call it. Like appropriating the language of the left. And just, it seems like something from like, Black Mirror, but it's the reality. It's like people really like they're, and then even in the terms of how they frame it, they say that this is actually the majority perspective. Like, no, the people in my community don't, like, that's not the majority perspective for the people in my community. And it's not the majority of perspective of most New Yorkers. But, you know, I guess, a very vocal few with money, feel that their money is what actually counts as the real weight of what should matter. And then so they're going to weigh in on this, trying to weigh in on my election, and as well as Claire and Jonathan and every other socialist that's running and WFP endorsed candidate.
So what's the game plan to beat that money? How are you going to win this race?
You know what? the thing is like they can dump this money in, but the message is what I think will carry the day. And I think that also people hearing this are not going to be happy. People don't want to hear about how millionaires and billionaires who are outside of their community are weighing in and trying to sway and change the direction. And I think that once people also hear that, you know, like this also goes again to say like the disconnect with the establishment. The fact that like the politics that I'm running on, I speak to what the community is asking for and needs. And then with this stance, when we have an opportunity for an elected official to, we can't necessarily sway the policy and politics of a global landscape. But you can stand for something that speaks to like the values of your community. And we have, you know, people who are not doing that right now. And then, so I think once people in the community also hear that, they will feel even more empowered to, one, vote with their dollars by supporting our candidate campaigns and pushing back against this. But also on June 25th, when the primary comes, they will also, come forward to vote with their votes and speak their conscience that way and make it clear about what they really care about. And it's not what some millionaire and billionaires are trying to orchestrate from the shadows.
Yeah, and you kept saying, you know, like the community is going to hear it. The community is going to hear it because, you know, when you're endorsed by DSA and, you know, part of the game plan is like going out there, knocking on doors, talking to the community.
I just wanted to add, yes, that is a very important part of this. Being part of DSA is a member-led organization, and DSA has been truly a counterbalancing and DSA has actually pushed back and been a countervailing power to the Democratic establishment machine in the machine politics that has really dominated New York. And they've made some serious inroads that people who have watched New York politics for a long time never thought they would see in their lifetime. And so they've done that by being most animated and tapped in to what people's needs are, but also being engaged and actually having tons of volunteers out there, as you mentioned, like hitting the streets and carrying this message and like, hey, there's someone out here who's different than what you're expecting the status quo, who's offering something and going to fight for you and is also just like you. They're carrying that message. And obviously this is such an important time that we're in. And I mean, it can feel like every election and moment can be, but I think we are experiencing multiple situations and crises that are ongoing right now. And I think that DSA candidates and candidates on the left are offering some real solutions to these problems. And so, and we also are unbound by the kind of money and interests that hold back that thing. So I think that the marrying of the enthusiasm of volunteers carrying the message and then also the kind of message that people are receiving is going to win the day.
Yeah, and I think it's always really interesting too how like the campaign environment that you're building now can then be used to help win the things, you know, that you actually want for the community. It's a really exciting thing. So are there any, you know, interesting or inspiring stories you've had, you know, with people out in the community on the campaign trail so far that you'd like to share with us?
I'm running in my neighborhood and I go in various places. So like the dog park at Von King and things like that. And volunteers for my campaign have been canvassing and or petitioning more recently. And I myself also petitioning. And so I've had like great stories where I've heard from a friend of mine who's a coworker at my job, my coworker. And he lives in the neighborhood. And I found out like him and his wife were just walking through Von King Park and then they got, you know, solicited to sign a petition. And then when, you know, the volunteer came up and they started like talking about, you know, like XYZ about the campaign and myself. And oh, yeah, I know this guy. He's my friend. We work together. And it was like this, you know, like this small circle moment of things coming together. But it was also like he talked about how he brought his wife over, got her to sign, and then just started having this conversation with her and their friends about the campaign. And he's someone that has known me through the time of we worked together at Barney's, actually. So he knows how I have been on the bargaining committee and fought for these things for us, and then has known me like through being PTA president and being involved in this mobile pantry partnership with Food Bank for New York City. This is something that I did with the PTA in the height of the pandemic, something I'm very proud of. It's an ongoing project. So you've seen like these things about like how I have delivered for the community, and now seeing like me run. And then so it's just like amazing thing. Like I, you know, you never know who's going to talk to who or what will happen. Or another funny situation I had, a former member of the PTA, she got canvassed also. And so they knocked on her door and she was like, answer. And they're like, oh, we're here with Ian, you know, Ian Terrell Huntley campaign. She was like, wait, what? Like, I know Ian, but not well enough that he's going to go through the trouble of like having some random people come in, like prank me. But, you know, I hadn't spoken to her more recently about running. But then so she was like, oh, and she was like, no, this is great. And then so these moments of people who you have touched in your life in other ways, and then now they're also like are becoming a part of the story, and knowing that you also are representing them. It's just something that is very much like, it's the part that's most exciting and the part that gives me the most drive to know that like, yeah, this is what I'm fighting for. These are the people, like my, like, even when I don't even know, like I'm discovering, like here we are, like this is a constituent, or you know, so.
It's good to hear stories like that, and that local politics can be, you know, something that's inspiring and fulfilling, especially when there's just such horrible politics in the national news and national elections right now. So yeah, thanks so much for sharing that. And yeah, is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know about you or your campaign? And where can people go to if they want to learn more about you?
I'm a Libra. My favorite color is black, and or red. But you can check out the campaign at Ian Eon at ianforassembly.com, eonforassembly.com. And that has all the links to my social media and also where you can sign up for events as well. Like we have canvassing. So if you want to be involved in talking to your neighbors and friends or just people, just even if you don't live in this community and you believe in the politics and what this, what we're running on, because we are fighting for a better New York, state as well, because that's what this will lead to. If you want to get engaged in this, you can come down and also canvass. And so there are dates listed on there. We just opened a campaign office, so there'll be some exciting events there. Like we have a backyard area, so, and a grill. So this is all very exciting things to come. And I just want people to know that I truly am a working class individual who's working and fighting for working class values, and part of a movement that has brought me to this moment to deliver like this. And I'm proud to say that all these experiences like are so important. Like I said, I'm a retail worker and so yeah, this is a truly working class campaign, and for working class people and a better New York and a better Brooklyn. And so I hope to have your support and have you out here if you're available to come.
I'm jealous of everyone who's going to get to hang out in that Bed-Stuy backyard after canvassing on beautiful Bed-Stuy streets.
Well, I know.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time. I'm sure, you know, yeah, as a worker, as a father, as someone who's also running for election, you're pretty busy. So we just thank you so much for taking the time to join us on Revolutions Per Minute today.
It's really an honor to be here. I appreciate it.
You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. And you just heard from Ian Terrell Huntley, DSA-endorsed candidate for Assembly District 56 in Bed-Stuy and Crown Heights. We have about 5 minutes left in the show, and we would love to hear from you if you want to call in. The number is 212-209-2877. You know, let us know if you voted blank today, if you have any thoughts about Ian. And we do have one caller already on the line. Caller, you are live on WBAI. What is your question or comment tonight?
Looks like the caller gave up.
Well, that means we have an open line in case anybody else wants to call in tonight. Like I said, we have about 5 more minutes, and the number is 212-209-2877. Yeah, we would love to hear from you, especially, you know, if maybe you left your ballot today in the primary blank. If you have any thoughts about any of the other primaries that will be happening this year, not just that presidential election looming over us. Mm-hmm. Do we have a caller?
Hello?
Hi, yeah, you were live on WBAI.
Yes, hi. I am actually a constituent in Ian's neighborhood, Bedford-Stuyvesant, part of the neighborhood. I think actually he has an issue that if he really hits it hard, he can win. And the issue is the Jefferson Armory. There is this massive armory that's on Jefferson Avenue that the people in the neighborhood know about. And it's connected to the other even more massive armory that's on Atlantic Avenue. There are underground tunnels that connect these two armories. And his opponent actually is taking a position that she's going to make part of it, you know, most of it, into like a community center and small business like pop-up shops, and have a little bit of it for the homeless. There's a homeless population. There's a homeless and a migrant population that temporarily got thrown out of there due to there were fire regulations. They were in violation. So it's like in a flux. So I'm just surprised that he's not here, because that's an issue that cuts across a lot of people if he takes a stand. His opponent is setting herself up, has taken stands, and is actually has people out there, you know, saying potentially what she wants to do with it. And the state representative actually has a lot of power with that particular armory, because it's actually owned by Brooklyn, as opposed to some of those armories in Manhattan. So I'm just curious that he's, you know, because his opponent has posters that are up, but his opponent has more posters and has actually taken a stand last week on this armory. So, and actually, you know, it would actually be more in the philosophy of you guys, of the DSA, to take some kind of a stand on that. But I think that's an issue that can pull that can pull votes on a lot of votes. Because the voter turnout is low in the 56th Assembly District. I follow it. Okay?
Yeah, well, thank you so much for calling in. I am, not...
She doesn't do anything because she's on that, like, the last 2 to 3 weeks. She's on that. She took a unusual position for someone who's supported by some of these interests that he was talking about. She should have actually talked about more of those interests. But that one local issue could swing the election to either person.
Well, I will make sure that his campaign is aware that you called in. We really appreciate your call. And I do know, you know, Jabari Brisport, who has a lot of overlap with his district, you know, did take a very community-centered approach to the Bedford Armory. And, yeah, I think, as you said, you know, having state elected officials weigh in on these issues as someone who's done a lot of organizing in New York, it definitely makes a huge, huge difference.
Big opening because there's nobody in there right now.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. We got to wrap up and get to the next show, give our engineers a little bit of time. But again, thank you for calling in. You've been listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming on your favorite podcast app. To connect with us after the show, you can email us at revolutionsnyc@gmail.com. And you can find us on our website, revolutionsperminute.simplecast.com, and on Twitter at NYCRPM. I'm Lisa Shi. Have a wonderful night, New York City. We'll catch you next week.
This is Baby K.
And this is DJ Kyle McNeil.
Of The Sweet Spot. And we are so excited to announce our brand new time slot, Tuesday nights, 10 p.m. to midnight.
Same great soulful sounds, old and new.
Brand new day, Tuesdays at 10 p.m.
Only on WBAI 99.5 FM.
New York's Pacifica Radio. Sweet Tuesday, dark Tuesday, everything
Mindfield, which comes to you every Wednesday at 2 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 FM. Together with my co-host, nurse, family therapist, Richardina Theodore, we delve into the explosive issues in mental health. Our mission is to help you know yourself, release your anxieties and your depression, and free your mind. Only on WBAI, the voice of the voiceless, can we voiceless ones be heard. Support the show and WBAI by donating at give2wbai.org. That's the word give, the number 2, at wbai.org. Or by calling 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. You can support the show and the station even more by going to give2wbai.org and giving a monthly donation of as little as $10 per month as a WBAI buddy to your favorite show on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Extinction Diaries. Another study is out, and this one shows that the disturbed landscapes can take 3 centuries or more to recover to their original state. However, more than 64% of recorded man-made and natural disaster disturbances have not recovered. This is an alarming statistic when such devastating practices like mountaintop removal, clear-cutting, and other deforestation are commonplace. The study conducted analysis of 5 major ecosystems from Arctic tundra to tropical rainforest using 14,000 samples from fossil records as well as today. Researchers at the Georgia Institute of Technology conducted the study and say that the last time landscape resilience was anything like today was right before and during the mass extinction that happened 13,000 years ago. Quoting the authors of the study, "Our work indicates that the landscapes today are once again exhibiting low resilience, foreboding potential extinctions to come. The scientific proof is all around us. For the first time, humans have both the capability to destroy most of our planet's species, including our own, and the capability of uniting and stopping the extinction." My name is Cheyenne Sun Thunder, and this is a Small World Radio production.
$10 a month. It's the price of a gigabyte of data for that iPad you never use. It's two overpriced coffees you ordered when you forgot to look at the menu. It's your overzealous attempts to meet the credit card minimum at the bodega on the corner. But $10 a month could be a lot more. Become a BAI buddy and commit to a recurring monthly donation to WBAI. This money will help us continue to broadcast the thoughts and perspectives of the progressive public. A BAI buddy is also not without perks. Your monthly contribution will earn you a WBAI tote bag and a member card offering Zipcar sales, discounted meals at select restaurants, and a handful of other benefits. You will also become a full voting member of WBAI, and our diverse programming will reflect your voice. Go to givetowbai.org and become a BAI buddy to support Free Speech Radio today.
This is Bobby Humphrey.